You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Support for today's show comes from Google Play. Did you know that you can now download and listen to audiobooks on Google Play? That's right. With hands-free listening using Google Assistant or Chromecast, you can enjoy thousands of titles a la carte, no subscription necessary. There's even multi-device integration across the Google ecosystem. And for a limited time, you get $10 off your first one by visiting g.co/play/kick. That's g.co/play/kick. Find your story with audiobooks on Google Play. And now, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. That was a clip of Greg Gutfeld on the Fox News program The Five, which he co-hosts with Dana Perino, Juan Williams, and Jesse Waters. The puckish Gutfeld might seem a surprising fit for the straight-laced Fox News, but his mix of razor-sharp political commentary and oddball humor have made him one of the network's most popular personalities ever since he began hosting the late-night show Red Eye in 2007. After 8 years on Red Eye, he decided to opt for an earlier work schedule, now hosting the Greg Gutfeld Show on Saturdays and The Five every weekday, where his signature monologues have become the highlight of the show. He recently compiled some of his favorite monologues into a new book titled The Gutfeld Monologues, Classic Rants from The Five. And as the cover warns, this is not your grandmother's anthology book. It's a collection of his best commentary, layered with additional commentary on the commentary that's witty, sarcastic, and at times even self-critical. And today, Greg Gutfeld sits down with me at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum to talk about the book and the opportunity it gave him to troll himself. He talks about his political evolution beginning at liberal enclave UC Berkeley and how extremism on the left and the right led him to identify as a free-thinking libertarian. He recalls his early days working at the Huffington Post with his best buddy Andrew Breitbart, and how a prank involving costumed dwarves got him fired as editor of Stuff magazine. Then he shares how his quirky little late-night show became a hit on the unlikeliest of networks by giving Fox News viewers a much-needed break from 24-hour politics and stoners an alternative to infomercials. He reveals how he's broadened the Fox News demographic one unicorn at a time, how thrash metal helps him bridge the political divide, and how he manages to keep his antics from getting him in trouble at the network. Plus, Gutfeld on the scourge of British lad culture, pet videos, yoga news, and Fox News' next big hit, a talk show hosted by a dolphin. Coming up with Greg Gutfeld in just a moment. I'm here at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum with Greg Gutfeld. Greg Gutfeld is a New York Times bestselling author, a satirist, humorist, blogger, and magazine editor. In 2007, Greg joined Fox News, where he hosted the popular late-night show Red Eye for 8 years, and he's currently the host of The Greg Gutfeld Show and the co-host of The Five on Fox News. Prior to that, he was editor of Men's Health Magazine, Stuff, and Maxim UK, as well as a contributor to the Huffington Post, and as ever, he remains a tireless advocate for unicorns. His latest book is called The Gutfeld Monologues, Classic Rants from the Five. Greg, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be a pleasure, I'm sure. And if it isn't, I'll kill you.
What is the obsession with unicorns? I'm just going to, out of the gate, what everyone wants to know here.
It's, okay, it's a really strange thing. I realized early on in my career that you could actually energize a certain segment of the population by doing some very simple different things. Like when I did Men's Health, I had my mom had an advice column. So you had all these people that like, oh, your mom's adorable. And so you get a different group of people. And I realized at Red Eye, when I created this fake obsession with unicorns, that it kind of energized a certain segment of the population who either got the joke or were into unicorns. And it was just, all it took was one sentence. You know, every day I'd say, or I would draw a unicorn. Then you all of a sudden you have families. So I have these book signings and families show up and every kid is bringing me a unicorn. They're bringing me stuffed unicorns, drawings of unicorns. And now I have to embrace this wholeheartedly. I am the unicorn guy and the kids. And so what I realized is that it's a family thing with the five, especially because you got it's at 5 o'clock, they're making dinner or whatever. And the kids are sitting there. I'm a unicorn weirdo and I'm doing animal videos at one more thing. Like I'll show like funny little cat stuff. And so the kids may not understand politically anything that I'm saying. Half the time I don't, but the kids don't. But they go, he's funny because he yells, makes funny faces. He likes unicorns and he has like a dog riding another dog on a horse. And I hate these people. And they like, so whenever I do these book signings, all of these kids recite the stuff that I've said, and I'm like going, I get it. It's like all you have to do, you don't have to be like, you don't have to be straight down the line with everything. You don't have to be that guy. You don't have to be the perfect talk show host. You could have, just by going off the track, whether like I play, like for example, the music that I play on the five, thrash metal, punk, and electronica. That's what I play, maybe some old country, but mostly thrash. I'll play Slayer or Iron Age or Power Trip, and then I'll do like some old punk from The Clash, The Cramps, which is probably my favorite band. But the point is, people who don't like politics are watching, let's say the TV's on and their dad's watching or their grandmother's watching, and all of a sudden they hear a Cramps or they hear a Killing Joke, and they go, what the hell is that? That's what happened with Power Trip. You know, the guy was like, his dad's listening, or watched The Five, and the guy, the lead singer of The Power Trip, hears a song from his band on Fox News, and he's like, what the hell? Yeah, what the hell is going on? And then we ended up going out, and we got drunk in Texas last week. But my point is this, just a slight, subtle deviation from the norm creates curiosity and interest. So whether it's unicorns or music.
Yeah, I would love to see the Venn diagram between Fox News and unicorns.
Yes, it's a tiny sliver, but they're very wealthy, you know, because they can do whatever. I've made billions, so now I can live the life of a unicorn freak.
You can afford to care about unicorns.
Yes, now I have the freedom to dress like a unicorn and frolic in the park at 4 a.m. Listening to death metal.
Sort of along those lines, can I just say that Fox News absolutely needs to make the Dolphin Report a real thing.
Was that great? So
that was incredible.
You know, you know where that came from?
That said it all to me.
Yeah, the great thing is the name. It was it Dolphin Stevens?
Yeah,
Dolphin Stevens Report with Dolphin Stevens and Ted Frogerson.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen this, it's basically a talk show hosted by a dolphin and a co-host who's a frog. And what happened was I hate doing book segments on my show because I feel that it's gratuitous. I don't like doing it, but I got to promote it. And it's like, and I won't do The View. Like, and they haven't asked me. I did The View like 15 years ago. It was interesting. But like, it was that week when Judge Jeanine got in that big kerfuffle with Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
So I was like going like, we should do a talk show where that happens, but it's like this surreal talk show and it gets really, but it's animals. So I was thinking of like the Animal Five where I'm sitting there, but there's all animals. But that was like, How about if we just do...
That's five costumes you got to pay for. That's not in the budget,
five costumes. They all smell. They're never cleaned. Like, when you turn them in, they don't clean them. They don't. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And so I came up with Dolphin Stevens, and then Tom, the producer, added Ted Frogerson. And the best part was the just... The dolphin language and the subtitles, and we played it totally amazing. Straight for like 6 minutes. And I remember I was on Twitter, and I go, okay, I know how this goes because I did Red Eye for 8 years. The joke exists because of its length. You got to kill that. You got to just drive it into the ground and then keep driving it. It's like the Simpsons Sideshow Bob stepping on the rake.
Yeah.
I saw like within 1 minute people going, make this stop. My dog's going crazy. Everybody was saying my dog's going crazy because the
high-pitched dolphin noise.
Yes. But it was great. It was we didn't build the set, but we created the set. That's where you do where Bill Hemmer does his show, and so we created a backdrop for the Dolphin Stevens, and so it looked like an actual Fox show.
Yeah,
it had the feel of
legit.
It.
That and I loved the screen crawl.
Yes,
that was amazing. All the pro dolphin propaganda.
Yes,
was genius.
It was anti shark, pro dolphin. But it's like okay, it is like you got to create the universe. It's like
you got to commit.
I can't think of the name
if you're
going
to do it, you have to commit.
Yeah, the show that I love. Which is BoJack Horseman.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So the episode where he goes to the film festival underwater.
I don't think I've seen that.
It's the first episode. It's like episode 13.
Okay.
Watch it. Okay. He goes to a film festival that's in the sea, and it's just so beautiful. It's like one of the most moving 30 minutes of TV.
Yeah.
And trust me, you'll be like, why didn't I see this before? But that's the inspiration for Dolphin. It was like, create the universe and live in it, you know?
I mean, the Dolphin Report pretty well sums up your special little niche within Fox News. I am continually, from Red Eye to the present, just amazed that Rupert lets you do your thing at his little news channel. What is that conversation like when the higher-ups are like, hey, Greg, what's on the show this week?
You know, it's interesting. They trust me.
Yeah.
And
should they?
I think they, well, look, I'm pretty, I mean, like, whatever I do may confuse them, but it won't get you into trouble.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, I am a clown or a fool.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty good at it. Like, I know.
Yeah.
But
you don't have a lot of Shep Smith slips there.
Yeah, I love Shep. Shep, when we first started doing Red Eye, he did announcements for us. It was great. He was so nice to us. But like with Red Eye, because it was at 2 a.m. and then later they moved it to 3, 90% of the people at Fox weren't even watching it. So what happened was every single day that we did the show, we got slightly better or slightly worse. But over time, you get slightly better. So after 1,000 shows, I would say after 6 months, so that's 150 shows or whatever, all of a sudden we were like a show.
Yeah.
But the first 5 months, we stunk. And it was like really bad. I was sweaty.
But it was on so late, no one cared?
No one cared. And then so it was like, well, I think there was a decision that I made where I go, if nobody cares and I don't care, unicorns galore, absurd introductions, surreal segments that like could even end a disaster or make no sense, but just do it. Just do it. And what happened was we ended up building this rabid, crazy audience. I did book signings in Texas and then in New Jersey, New York. So people came up with like 13-year-old kids, like who I was breastfeeding him, watching Red Eye, that kind of thing. Those are the kind of stories.
Yeah.
And they like that these people had like were late night watching this show, and it was like something. So it was like there was nothing like it, and I kind of like
there
forgot.
Wasn't. That's what was great.
I forgot. But you know what?
It was like an Algonquin round table for the modern age. Just people riffing on culture and politics and having fun. No one taking themselves too seriously.
Yeah. Getting into trouble.
It was so
about
great.
like the thing. Like we did this thing called Yoga News. You should Google, but it was like where you'd have newscaster doing yoga while I read the news. Got so much trouble for that one. But I didn't know. Like I was like, and so they come out. But the great thing is when I would get in trouble, it was after the fact. They would just call me into an office and go, why?
They'd wake up the next day.
Yeah. But they would go like, they'd find out about it.
Yeah.
And they'd go, why? And I'd go, what? Why? I don't know. It seemed like a good idea. And then they just kind of go, But then, but now, like, I don't, you know, I don't, you know, I know that the powers that be love the GG show. They love it. And it's because it's like, it's not like anything on the network. That's important. It's got to be something apart from it so that you have relief from the cycle of news. You don't need, chances are, and when I get challenged over, like, we need something more topical, it's like, no, you don't. You need the opposite of topical.
Yeah.
You need evergreen. You need you need five really smart people, or four smart people and one merry, insane prankster to sit there and talk about current events and big picture stuff and weird things. You don't need to hear what happened. Like, I'm not going to talk about the Mueller probe. I'm not, you know, it's just like everybody's got their fill.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't just have politics for an hour without something to let the steam out.
You're going
to
be a miserable person. And it's like, I when Red Eye started, and this was before Twitter, so it was all email.
Yeah.
This has no place on Fox News. And so I would end up calling viewers who sent hate mail and ask them to come on the show. And they wouldn't. They'd go, what you're doing is terrible. It has no place here. They were like, and I was like, but then I actually have this in my speech that I'm not doing today. There are three steps to Red Eye. I think it's repulsion, confusion, addiction. So first it's like, what is this godforsaken piece of crap? These people, I hate these people. Then it's like, wait a minute. There's something going on here that I didn't quite catch. And now I realize over time that it's actually the whole thing is something I didn't catch. That this is not actually, this is like a TV show within a TV show within a TV show. And then it's addiction. And then it's all of a sudden you're writing to me. You're sending me unicorn stuff. You're buying me. You're buying my unicorn drawings. But it's like it is. Yeah. It starts repulsion, confusion, and then addiction.
Yeah.
And then extinction.
You're right. And then extinction. I mean, what happened there? Was it just that doing a late night show 5 days a week and also doing an afternoon show?
I probably could have done it, but it was, I think I was dead. I mean, like I'd done it for 8 years and also they were talking about doing the GG show.
And so you didn't tape it earlier in the day, right?
Taped it at 8 o'clock. So I would do so it's possible that I could have kept doing it.
You weren't taping at 5 like Johnny Carson. Or, well,
yeah.
This is, shows how antiquated my references yes. are.
But Johnny Carson is a 1970s, 1980s TV personality.
Yeah, the Steve Allen show.
Yes. all of his wives are named Joanna. Just remember that. He couldn't get out of the Joanna thing. He was just like, it's got to be Joanna. That's got to kill the first wife. So first wife was like, so what's your next wife's name? Joanna. It's like, why did you divorce me? It's like, what's the problem, dude? But anyway, I forgot what I was talking about. But there's
I was just going to say there is nothing like that. The closest thing I think of is it's like Bill Maher. If Bill Maher was funny, he's so focused on being political, he doesn't focus anymore on being funny.
You know what's interesting?
And you put the funny first.
I've noticed, like, I don't watch it because it's on like a Friday. I don't watch it. I don't know who.
Yeah, it's on a Saturday.
Is it on Saturday or Friday?
I think it's Saturday.
No, because it's,
is it?
I read about it. I read about whatever hits on Saturday.
Okay,
but what I've noticed is that what seeps through is a disdain for his own audience, because I think he's really tired of the people who applaud the talking points and people that boo the stuff. I think he gets really mad. I've seen his face. He just goes like this. He goes, no, no, no. He'll do this. He'll start shaking his head like, this is too, you're making it too easy for me. It's not black. Yeah. Because I do think there are times when he's really brave. When he had, you know, Sam Harris on and that whole, what's his face, Ben Affleck thing that went down. And also he does get, I think he's coming out going after like the I would, you know, the to use the Dave Rubin line, the regressive left.
Mm-hmm.
I think in his head and heart he knows that there's something going on in the Trump world that is actually good, but he can't say it. He can't actually say it.
Yeah. He could never bring himself.
I mean, we all
to
have
that.
To. We all know. We all understand why people don't like Trump. We all get it. But that's old news now. The new news is how do you process why it happened and where he's going and what he's doing.
Yeah.
And you could sit back and go, Jesus, I didn't expect him to do this with North Korea. Like, if you're a liberal, it's like, I didn't expect that. I mean, he's actually he's a peacenik.
It doesn't fit the script.
Yeah, it's like
totally
weird.
Now,
I went into a different place.
No, but I mean, you're an interesting fit at Fox News because you describe yourself as a libertarian-leaning conservative or a libertarian and an agnostic atheist, which would not necessarily fit the profile there.
Yeah.
I'm very interested in your whole philosophical journey. You started out at Berkeley, right?
Right, right.
What was your politics like back then?
I think when I was in high school, I went to Serra High School, which is in San Mateo, and it was all boys' school. I was naturally drawn towards liberal stuff because it was more romantic, more rebellious. Mm-hmm. I was reading a lot of Albert Camus, and I didn't even understand it. But my favorite book was like The Fall, yeah, and Naked Lunch, William Burroughs.
Oh yeah,
I had Naked Lunch in my back pocket. That was my Catcher in the Rye. So I was playing every cliche. I worked for the Nuclear Freeze, which was in, I can't remember what year it was. But I was in high school, and to get extra credit in my religion class, I took I got signatures for the campaign. It was to ban nuclear weapons from being in California. Like, you can't bring them in. And I feel like it was Alan Cranston who was the senator behind this. But it was like 1980. Anyway, I was doing it for extra credit. So I would stand in front of a church with a signature thing. But I was like doing it, and it was like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
But anyway, so when I got to Berkeley, then I was around real liberals. And the one thing about it's not even about ideology. It's just about mob. It's like when you're around a bunch of people that think the same way, you got to walk away. So that happens to me, not just with the left, but also with the right and even libertarians. Like when you're at a libertarian function, as you will get, you will feel that same kind of, but they're a gentle mob. They're a gentle mob, but they're unusual. But like the left wing mob is scary. Yeah. If you go on Twitter, it's really frightening. I'm writing a piece that's, that should be published this week on mobbery, which I'd written a book, Joy of Hate, which was about that about five years ago. But I think what happens is I have an innate reaction against, like, and it sounds so like self-promoting. When I see another group, I just react differently. Everybody feels that way. Everybody feels that way.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like I have issues with, like, I get really scared. I get scared is what happens. Like at any moment they could turn on me. And so I run away. And I think even with like, with conservatives, same way. And also I didn't like a litmus test. I didn't like the laundry list of issues. I wanted to be able to go and go, I like this, I don't like this. I went for drug legalization.
Politics should be a la carte.
Yeah, it's a la carte. Exactly. I'm the a la carte party. And by the way, you know, the Wikipedia thing has me as an agnostic atheist, and I don't know how to change that.
Oh, really?
Because I don't know if I've ever said that about myself, but it's been diagnosed, and it's like I can't get out of it. But I don't like profess not to know, which is, I think I got that from Penn Jillette. You don't know.
Oh, Penn's great.
Yeah, it's just I don't know.
Yeah.
That's where I am.
Yeah,
and it's not a bad thing. You know, I don't know. I would never push.
I mean,
admitting
any kind of ignorance is like the death nail for anyone these days.
Yeah,
that's what bothers me about the mob is the certitude.
Yes.
I mean, no one wants to question anything. And yet, ironically, you have so many people questioning all the things they shouldn't question.
Yeah.
The conspiracy theorists, the Alex Jones crowd.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird and unusual time. I think it's like we're experiencing growing pains in this technological movement, and I don't know which way it's going, but I'm always confused, and I'm sure you do the same thing. I read Reason, like Reason Mag.
Oh, I love Reason.
Reason is really good about, like, okay, I'm really freaking out about 3D printing guns. It's like they have before you finish the sentence, they already have the article. Don't worry about 3D printed guns. In fact, here's an article to show you how to make your own. And they did it. Like they had an issue, which was like the Vice issue or something. It was a couple months ago, and they show you how to make a gun. It's like because they know this is not going to affect rates of violence if we show you how to make a gun.
Yeah.
And it was also like sex work, and Reason is really good at lowering the heat on things.
Yeah,
and I played. It was a funny story. Nick Gillespie had me and Breitbart speak at a thing at Reason, like I don't know, like 10 years ago, maybe, maybe not 10. But both the funny thing that me and Breitbart had in common is that we both had applied for jobs at Reason and got turned down.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, I remember I got the rejection letter from a woman named Virginia Postrell.
Yeah, what did it say?
Yeah, it just said, hey, you know, I got thousands of rejection letters. It was like, hey, thanks. no thanks, bye. That was it. I go back, when I go back and I do these, I've done things with Nick. I always bring that up. And me and Breitbart did the same thing. We're like going, well, now you're interviewing us. You guys didn't even let us, you guys knew we weren't good enough to be at your magazine. It's true. I was just not prepared.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Greg Gutfeld when we come back in just a minute. Hey, folks, here's some advice for anyone who sends emails to their customers. You deserve a better email marketing platform, one that's actually designed with your type of organization in mind. And unlike other email providers, Emma puts its customers first, offering powerful email marketing with a personal touch. With Emma, you'll have everything you need to connect your data, build your audience, and do your most successful marketing ever. Because their easy-to-use platform makes advanced functionality accessible to everyone on your team, no technical skills required. You can even connect Emma with the services you count on to run your business, like Salesforce and Google Analytics. Not to mention, Emma's award-winning team is always ready to support you on your email marketing strategy, design, list migration, and more. So put the power of email experts behind your marketing. Request a customized demo of Emma's email marketing platform today at myemma.com. Again, that's myemma.com. Do you want to learn how to go from good to great to unstoppable? Do you want to maximize your potential? Do you see the value of networking with other ambitious professionals? If you answered yes, invest in yourself. Buy a ticket now to Relentless MV, a very unique event being held in Martha's Vineyard September 28th through 30th, featuring elite performers like David Goggins, Tim Grover, and the Iron Cowboy. Their speakers will share tips, tricks, and experiences to help you become unstoppable. The event is being held at Lambert's Cove Inn, a beautifully restored farmhouse from the 1700s nestled in the woods. This event promises a ton of fun and, more importantly, a great investment in your future. Both weekend and day passes are available. And as a listener of this podcast, you get a special deal. Use promo code KICK to receive $500 off. Visit RelentlessMV.com for more information. Again, that's RelentlessMV.com and promo code KICK for $500 off. Buy now, limited tickets are available. And now, back to the podcast.
I guess a lot of people don't know this, but before you came to Fox, you had this successful career as a magazine editor with Men's Health and Stuff Magazine, Maxim UK. I've heard something and I want to ask you about it. Is it true that you got fired from Stuff because you hired seven dwarves to annoy people at a magazine conference?
Close.
Yeah?
I would say you're about 70% correct. So what happened was I'd been asked to speak at a magazine conference with the editors of Rolling Stone, Oprah, Glamour, I think, and Cosmo. They were all, you'd get up on the days. And the topic was how to create buzz. And I was like, I remember sitting at my desk and going, oh, this is so stupid. Like, oh, how pathetic. Like, I just immediately dismiss it. So I go, tell them, no. They invited me to speak. And I go, no, tell them, F off. I'm not going to do it. So they get, they hire Keith Blanchard, who was the editor of Maxim, which is in the same company. So I'm at Stuff.
Right, right. And
so he gets the same umbrella. So they have him sit in for me. And I'm like going, did I just blow an opportunity for something really, really like devious? So the thing was how to create buzz. And so I called this guy, Jeffrey Beecher, who used to do the thing called Beecher's Madhouse, which is in Vegas. Right, and this is how great New York is. It's like, I call him up and I go, can you get me, because I know that he works in a, it's like a, yeah, it's
he
like
is
a crazy,
kind of the midget hookup, isn't he?
It's a theatrical thing. Little people. You might, sorry. It's little people. Shit. But I go, I need three little people. And he goes, when? So it wasn't like, I can't do that. He goes, when? I met him at a bar on 9th Avenue. And he's like, I got this guy. I go, yep, sign him up. This is such a great story. While this is going on, Discovery Channel was doing a new show called Head to Head, which never aired. Okay. I might be wrong on the network. Could be history. I think it's Discovery. Okay. Head to Head looks at a business.
Oh, okay.
And looks at the competitors. So they had me, they had Stuff Magazine, FHM, and Gear Magazine. None of these magazines exist anymore. So they had hired people to tail. They had a production staff that were tailing me while I was doing this. which adds this other crazy absurd levels of absurdity. So anyway, three little people show up. One's dressed as a preppy. One's dressed as a gangster. And another one is dressed as, did I say, professor preppy? Oh, an elderly British guy with like a cane, whatever. So everybody files in. Now I'm in LA. I'm interviewing Pamela Anderson for the October issue of Stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm at Sunset Marquee in a bathrobe, nursing a hangover, but I'm on the phone with Bill Schultz. Bill Schultz works for me.
From Red Eye.
Yeah. But he worked at Stuff. He was my features editor. So he's in the building.
That's your history,
he's in the building. He's the little person handler. So he's there and he's watching it all go down. And so they find seats in the auditorium or wherever it was, and the people are up there. And so they have clipboards and they have their phones, and the symposium is how to create buzz. So their phones are on vibrate, and they're on vibrate on the clipboard. So when people are talking, all of a sudden you just hear this, their phones go off, and there's this massive buzzing. So we were creating buzz. So I had these three guys, and they're all over the place. There are three of them, and there's just buzz, buzz. And like, it was a couple of things that unintentionally hilarious happened. Number one, the woman who was the president of the Magazine Publishing Association is there, and she's going, "Can you please turn off your phone? Can you please turn off your phone?" And the one guy in the front goes, "It's because I'm short." And she goes, "I'm short too." And it's like it gets this weird thing. And then another person. So everybody's trying to pretend that nothing's going on, like it's not happening, because nobody wants to insult anybody, right? They don't want to say like this. These guys aren't journalists because they're obviously little people. They can't say that because that would be wrong. So it had this built-in armor.
I love that.
So they couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So finally, somebody had the guts. So there was this buzzing going on and people are getting pissed off. Two things happen. One, a woman stands up and goes, can't we just admit that there's something going on here? Come on. And like nobody, she goes, come on, there's something going on here. She was like the smart person, but she had the guts to say that.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting this all from Bill Schultz. So who knows? Like, but it ended up in the New York Times, the New York Post. It went everywhere. But the other thing too, Keith Blanchard, who was the editor of Maxim, and he was up on the dais. And I think he was really pissed off because people thought he was doing it. And it was like, they're all like, oh, it's obviously the editor from Maxim. And he's like, I got nothing to do with this. And so I get a call from the president of the company. Not Felix Dennis is the owner, but the president was this guy, Stephen Colvin. So they're all like, this shit's going down. It's like a big deal because Blanchard's pissed off. The MPA's pissed off for hiring him. All this stuff's going on. And I remember Colvin calls me and he goes, Greg, we have a bit of an issue here. And I go, yeah, I did that. That was me. And he goes, why didn't you tell me? And I go, because you would have said no. And he goes, you're right. I would have said no. Okay. Well, I'll see you when you get back to the office. And so we hang up and I'm at the Sunset Marquee. And I'm just laughing. And the next day, the New York Post has this huge piece. It's called Tiny Terror. So like a month later, I get called into the office. And it's like getting fired by the British is amazing because it's so polite. You know, we're going to be assigning a new role for you. And I go, what is it? What is my new role? Well, you're no longer going to be editor of Stuff magazine. And I go, well, what's going on? He goes, we're going to make you the director of brand development. And I go, you're firing me. No, we're giving you another job. It's like a bigger job. Is it a promotion? Are you promoting me? And he goes, yeah. And I go, oh, so then I get a raise. And he goes, well, if you're promoting me, you're giving me a raise.
Yeah.
Because you can't just, like, I'm the director of brand development. And he's like, yes. And I go, how much? So essentially I get fired, but I get a year contract as director of brand development,
yeah.
And they move me. The whole thing is they wanted me out of New York and away from the brand.
Okay.
They wanted me away from the magazine because I was a little bit more overpowering as an editor than Normal editors are supposed to fit into a spot.
Right.
But I was picking fights with Art Cooper and doing all sorts of crazy stuff with David Granger. I was like, I was treating it like a street fight and having fun. So they said, just move him to LA. He'll get meetings. We'll give him an agent at Endeavor. And you have meetings with MTV. And I did something called Fugliest Rockers. You know, but I was just basically taking meetings and running on Sunset Boulevard in the daytime, getting drunk in the afternoon, miserable. But it was all on their dime. I was living at Oakwood on West Arnett.
Oh, in Burbank?
The other one. No, I was at the non-fun one. I was at the one, like one block outside of La Cienega, in Arnaz, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
But great spot. It was kind of depressing. I'm trying to figure out if I went to the gym, if there was a gym there. But I don't know if there was a gym, but it was very interesting. And then that ran out. What they'd done is they basically removed the offending thing, put it over somewhere else. And then by the time a year ran out, they go, now we're done. But no. They stupidly hired me again to be editor-in-chief of Maxim in the UK.
Oh, that's right.
Because the guys...
brought you back home.
Because the guys in the UK loved my work. They loved stuff. And they loved Men's Health. That's how I met and that's how I ended up meeting my wife, was that they loved the magazines. They didn't give a damn about my personality.
Yeah.
They loved the weirdness. And by the way, if you liked Red Eye, Stuff Magazine was a men's magazine the way Red Eye was a men's show. It was the most happily homoerotic, subversive. Like, we did everything. We did everything to undercut the men's magazine movement. Like, anytime that we had a pictorial of a girl, the captions were a man hitting on the reader. Like, what are you doing later? Because we hated lad culture. We hated it. So they hired me for Maxim. Like, I was taking over a magazine that could only go down.
Yeah.
There's no way. So I already know it's a losing proposition. I knew that when I got on that horse, that horse was going out to the woods and not coming back. And it happened to all the magazines after that. It happened to FHM. It happened to Front. And then all the weeklies went away because of the internet killed it. Nobody needed it. But the first day of my job, I met my wife. We had a conference of all the Maxims in Portugal, and I didn't want to go because I just wanted to start my job. And they said, no, you have to go because you're going to have to tell all these sales guys your plan for Maxim because you're the flagship. And I'm going, okay. And so I flew to Portugal, and the first day there, I see this girl, and she's walking with the Russian editor, Sasha, who I knew like briefly. And he's like, Greg, hello, how are you? And it's like, hey, what's up? And then I'm looking at this girl, I go, whoa. And I was like really into her. And so I go back to my Brits. I go, I think I met my wife. And I swear to God, on a stack
really
of Bible.
Said that.
Yeah, I said, I think I met my wife. And they're like, good, really great. And they're like, the Brits get very excited about that
good
stuff.
On.
We're going to help you. We're going to help you do this, chap. And that's exactly what they. And so, like, for 3 days, I was trying to talk to her, but I couldn't tell her level of English.
Yeah,
you know, but she knew who I was because they were buying all my stuff. They'd at the Maxim Russia, and she had worked at Men's Fitness at Russia, had been buying my men's health stuff, my articles, and my stuff for Maxim. So she knew who I was, and so I remember it was like the last day I was there, and we were all going, the guys, not the girls, but the guys, like the Czech editor, the Australian editor, the Thailand editor, we're all going to go out and get wasted somewhere horrible, bad. And I was going to go with them. And then as we were walking out to get in the cabs, I saw her and I just said, hey, I just wanted to say, I think you're the most beautiful girl in the world. And it was nice to meet you because I figured, assume that's it. And she goes, I would expect something better from Greg Gutfeld. And I go,
ouch.
Yeah. And then I just started talking to her. And then we ended up like, I just told those guys to leave. And that night we ended up talking like about, well, we hooked up, but we talked. And then we made a vow that like, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're going to date.
Yeah.
And so like our first date was in Paris, and then it was great because she'd have to fly to Russia and I'd fly and we'd go to Paris and then Rome and then I proposed in Amsterdam. But it was really pretty funny because it was the first day on my job. So Maxim as a magazine itself, by the way, if you ever get a Maxim UK in that era, it'll blow your mind. It is the most subversive thing on the planet. If you think Red Eye was weird, There is nothing. Like, I did this comic strip called Dog Baby. Ah, forget it. I won't get into it. But anyway, but the point is, like, it might have been a disaster, but I met my wife, so selfishly it all worked out.
Yeah.
So all those guys that lost their jobs, like, oh, thanks, Greg. So what you're saying is it all worked out for you.
Yeah. And how long have you two been married?
Well, that was 2014. It might be 14 years in – it's 2018. 14, I think it's either 14 years. 14 years in next week.
Wow.
26th.
That's amazing.
Wait, no, that's our birthday. Sorry. Oh. No, it's November.
Either way, you got to get a gift.
I got to get a gift. Something. I better do something.
I have to ask then, because there's something that just doesn't make sense to me. I've been trying to figure this out in your timeline. At what point do you go from being a magazine guy to getting hired to Fox News? How the hell did that happen?
Well, the link that people miss is the Huffington Post. So I was working at Maxim when Matt Labash, who worked for their, I don't know, Weekly Standard at the time, said Ariana asked him to write for this new gig, but he can't do it because Bill Kristol won't let him. And I had been interviewed by AJ DeLorio. I loved this, like, it was the funny thing is, the irony of ironies is that the reason why I'm sitting here and you're interviewing me is probably because of AJ DeLorio, who probably doesn't even know that. You know the Hulk Hogan story, right? He's the guy that got sued for the Hulk Hogan story.
From Gawker, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So AJ did a blog called The Black Table with Will. Jeez, I can't think of his name. Will something. But anyway, and he interviewed me for The Black Table. Labash saw it. And he goes, I can't do this thing with Ariana, but do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, sure. What is it? He goes, it's a blog. And I, yeah, I'll do it. So Ariana emails me. I email back. And it's like, yeah. She goes, it launches this Tuesday. Now it's in LA, so I'm like 8 hours ahead, I think. So,
by the way, your Ariana impression's shit.
That was terrible. Look, darling, your writing. Yeah. It's very, you are the ombudsman. That's what she always says. She always says the ombudsman. But anyway, I was writing 8 hours ahead, so when my stuff posted, it was the first thing on the blog. Oh. So the first thing I did was a recipe for lemon squares. Because remember the Huffington Post, Breitbart had created the Huffington Post.
Right. People forget that Breitbart's got his start there.
So the whole thing was to show progressive celebrities their mindset. But what happened was it like backfired. It became a joke. But I was writing I wrote a thing for lemon squares, a recipe for lemon squares, and then a lost and found in which I was talking about how I was treating like the Huffington Post was like an actual building, and like Byron York lost a pair of swim trunks, and like Bill Maher left hair in the drain and all this other stuff. So I would write this weird stuff, and it got really popular. And then Breitbart called me because I had written something where I was making fun of Ariana, and he was like, hi, Greg, it's Andrew, and we talking. He was like, oh, you got to take this thing off. And I'm like, all right. And then 5 minutes later, he calls me back and he goes, forget everything I said. Forget it. Do whatever the hell you want. And we became like best friends. And we started writing together. So I would send him stuff. We'd go back and forth. And that, so from the Black Table to Huffington Post to Breitbart talking to probably, I think it might have been Ken LaCourte or somebody at Fox News in L.A. about this weirdo in London, Gutfeld. You should get him. And so they have a guy in London and they go meet Gutfeld for a drink. We go to this bar and the guy starts talking about this show and they don't have a name. They don't have anything. And I said, I'll do it. And so they flew me to meet Ailes. And well, first John Moody and Ailes. And it was a handshake deal, as smooth as anything I've ever done. I walk in, I'm talking to them. They got like, I think Breitbart had sold me to the LA people who had sold them that this person was unique. They'd never, and I had a whole tape of stuff I'd done at VH1, and I did all those like weren't the 80s great, whatever that crap was, you know, like where you come in, you go, what's up with Paris Hilton? I was that guy. Yeah. Okay. That was me.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I did a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. Now but, you didn't have to quote unquote audition for Ailes, did you?
No, I did not. Oh, I did not. Thank God for that. But anyway, the weird thing is I sat down with Moody and John Moody, and I figured that this is like a 6-month process. I come down, I'm like, I just flew in, I'm staying at some hotel. My wife was still in school, I think, but it was like, it was very stressful. We didn't have, a lot of things weren't put together at that time. And he just, and I go, so what's the plan? He goes, well, you start tomorrow. you do three shows in this lounge, and then we go live on Monday. And I go, what? And I'm like, no, I'm not ready. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know anything. And they go, no, it's fine. It's fine. Just do it. And that's how they were. Old school television. Yeah. They throw you into the deep end, and there's not even any water.
Yeah. Was their attitude just no one's going to watch anyways, so do whatever you want?
Moody described it the best way I've ever heard. He said, Red Eye, he was explaining it. There's actually a funny story to this, too, that was – he described it as a sandwich you make when you're drunk at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So you come in, what's in the fridge? You're not even sure, but you're putting together the main, like Bill Schultz is like old mayonnaise. Andy Levy's like stale meat, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like the ends of the bread that the only thing you have left. But
I mean, for them, realistically, the alternative was running reruns probably.
Yeah, it was.
So you had nothing to lose.
Well, actually, the reruns do really well because they're not reruns on the West Coast. So for example, 3 a.m. is midnight. So like they actually did, like they probably took a hit because a rerun doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't cost anything. And they get, so I have a feeling, so I actually took it. And also because we got sued over the name, it was so funny because this shows you how, like, if somebody just asked me, the original name for it was, Jesus, what's the name of that show? It was Underworld? Or Neverland. It was Wasteland.
Wasteland.
So the original title for Red Eye was Wasteland.
Okay.
And I came up with it and they loved it and it's a great title. And then I came up with another one called Red Eye because it's a stoner thing and it's late night. They love that too. So let's go with Red Eye. And then it turns out there's a newspaper that has the same name and they like, just change it. Change it to Wasteland. Yeah. But they didn't, and then they fought. And I don't know how much we paid for it.
you bought it.
I don't have a passion for the name. Just call it the Greg Gutfeld Show. They wouldn't do that.
I feel bad because we haven't even gotten to the book. I probably had like 20 more questions on the book.
I talk about the book all the time.
Okay.
Just buy the book, the monologues. But it's two books in one. It's got commentary. So there you go.
Yeah.
I just pitched my book.
Yeah. And the book, of course, is called The Gutfeld Monologues, Classic Rants from the Five. It debuted at number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list. Amazing. I actually listened to the audiobook, and I just want to say how great it was to actually listen to how you pulled that off, because you have some actor reading
my monologues.
Your monologues, and then it's almost like I'm listening to the Red Eye Greg trolling the Five Greg.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
It was incredible.
I'm like ripping my own writing. Yeah.
It was so good.
I got to listen to that.
You should. And by the way, I like the cover, glossy and matte.
Yes.
I've never seen that.
I've never seen it either. That was a little surprise to me too. And I go, wow. And I love the back too. I wrote the captions. It's like got cartoons on the back. It's like the Brady Bunch.
The Gutfeld Monologues, Classic Rants from the Five. Go get it. Greg, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
That was fun.
Thanks once more to Greg Gutfeld for coming on the podcast. And thanks again to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum for hosting our interview. Order the Gutfeld Monologues, Classic Rants from the Five on Amazon or Audible. Watch Greg on Fox News weekdays on The Five and Saturdays on The Greg Gutfeld Show. Greg's also a huge fan of podcasts, and you can subscribe to his own podcast, The One, with Greg Gutfeld on Fox News Radio, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Visit Greg's website for more fun stuff at ggutfeld.com and follow him on Twitter at Greg Gutfeld. You deserve a better email marketing platform, and unlike other email providers, Emma puts its customers first. It's powerful email marketing with a personal touch. Their award-winning team is always ready to support you on your email marketing strategy, design, list migration, and more, so you'll have everything you need to do your best email marketing yet. Request a customized demo of Emma's email marketing platform today at myemma.com. Again, that's myemma.com. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review. You can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and ideas at comments@kickassnews.com. I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.